Welcome to The Bag Drop, Untold Stories in Golf. I'm your co-host, Matt Considine. Again, this week, I'm your only host, Matt Considine. The professor, Dr. Kevin Moore, will not be with us today. He is still off gallivanting the Caribbean. I thought professors lived very modest lives. I thought they were humble, you know, students to academia and learning. He's always globetrotting, this guy. So we might be in the market for a new host. If you've ever thought about getting in the podcast game and you'd like to give it a whirl, give me a call. I'd love to have a co-host one of these days. But in lieu of the professor, we do have two very special guests coming on the show. A course that has been on my list for quite a while now since they did their renovation. The Charleston Muni, warmingly known as the Muni. We have the architect, Troy Miller, and the general manager, Marshall Orman, coming on the show. Very excited to talk to these guys. It's also the site, for all of our new club members out there, it's the site of the first round of our 2024 Founders Cup. So we get started in Charleston at the Muni on Friday afternoon, first week of October. So lots to talk about with these guys. I want to just dive right in to the show. Got a lot of questions for them. But first, a thanks to our sponsor of today's episode, Titleist. And the Vokey Wedges from Wedgeworks are now out. The SM10s, mine just arrived, and boy, am I having some fun in the backyard. I need to get to a golf course, but this SM10 wedges add to your bag a world of scoring opportunities between crisp contact, optimal flighting, incredible spin, and those magical Bob Vokey grinds. They give you everything you need to grow your short game skills, from the simple to the sensational. SM10s are made to make great shots happen. Check out their wedge fitting process. If you don't, it's funny. I was talking to the fitters and Aaron Dill from the PGA Tour tour truck. The number of people that don't get fit for wedges is astounding compared to drivers and irons. So get yourself a Titleist wedge fitting. They got certified wedge fitters all around the country. They're going to grow that program. One of the most fascinating experiences you'll have is going through a Titleist wedge fitting, and really recommend that for your new Vokey wedges. And thanks to you, the listener, for being with us today. I do want to just say, if you are enjoying these episodes of The Bag Drop, you're following along, don't forget to subscribe, to like us, to rate, review the show. That goes a long way for us in the golf world algorithms. And whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy your shows, just send us a note. Let us know that you're enjoying these shows, and we'll look forward to growing the community and getting more people involved. Now, without further ado, on to the show. Marshall, Troy, welcome to The Bag Drop.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for having us, Matt.
I'm glad you guys are here. We have a lot of questions for you guys. I've been to Charleston plenty of times. I'm an Ohioan, so I know we invade the turf down there. Are Ohioans still
welcome? Are we allowed to comment?
In South Carolina?
Have you seen the bumper stickers, the GBTO bumper stickers in Charleston that go back to Ohio? And I have to tell the story. So Charleston River Dogs, our local minor league baseball team, which Bill Murray is the director of fun. It's a great place to go to the Joe. They have a go back to Ohio night, Matt, where the guy who shows up in the most Ohio State Buckeyes gear gets a one-way Greyhound bus ticket back to Columbus. So yeah, we love you guys here. We love you.
I mean, but what are we doing for the economy, right?
100%.
Jobs.
And by the way, there's no greater group of people who understand and appreciate great golf. Obviously, starting with Mr. Nicholas down the road, Ohioans know golf and appreciate it. So that's the common ground we can always find in Charleston.
Thank you guys for being here. You know, I think there's going to be so many directions we could take this conversation, but I'm going to start with Friends of Muni and the idea behind creating this massive facelift for a municipal golf course, unlike really any municipal golf course project that I know of, and kind of where that all starts. So Troy, if you can get us started with what that process was like for you as the course architect and designer, and where it all began.
Sure, absolutely. I think that Charleston Muni, first of all, I consider myself a mere conduit for a massive amount of people who have a great affinity for the place. 1929, it first opened, and I've got a lot of family connection. My grandfather caddied there in the 30s. My father's first job in golf was there in the 60s. And I grew up playing the golf course myself. And as a golf course architect and a native Charlestonian, having the opportunity, you always, growing up on your golf course, if you're at all an architecture geek, you think about these things and you're like, what if I could do this to my golf course? And for me to have the opportunity to be a small piece of this project was a dream come true. And it really dates back for a long time, but 2015 being the time when this conversation really kicked off with our former mayor, Mayor Joe Riley, and then into Mayor John Tecklenburg, saying they really wanted to do something with Muni. And for the next 5 years, we figured out how to do that in terms of funding it, setting up the Friends of the Muni. And that gave me the time to kind of work on this idea about what do we want to do. And for Charleston, Charleston's a very historic town with two great historic Seth Rayner designs at the Country Club of Charleston and at Yeamans Hall. And so this is just an opportunity to me to really show off our Rayner roots and to make this style of architecture accessible to the general public that otherwise holistically around the country, and now a little less so with Rock Springs, but has not been available to anyone, maybe save Green, Briar, White, if you're willing to throw down 495 to play it. And so the idea of being able to have this style of Rayner architecture readily accessible to the general public at $18 a round for the local player, I feel like is just a great win for everybody. And so,
yeah, you talk. I mean, that is the big part of us is, you know, Ohio jokes aside, outside golfers visiting is like just the ability to access Rayner style, golden age architecture. We're fortunate as part of New Club that we do have those opportunities, but most people don't, right? And definitely not on a regular basis. And so you said roots of Rayner. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people mistakenly think that this was originally a Rayner golf course, which is a compliment to you, Troy. Yeah. But tell me about that in terms of your decisions to say, it's not a Rayner golf course, but we're going to build that style.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Charleston's is a museum piece in and of itself. The city of Charleston, we have incredible public spaces, green spaces around this city. And this is the largest public park in the city of Charleston. And when I think about the history of Charleston, the site of the first opera house, the first passenger railroad station, the first. Charleston has a lot of firsts. And the timing of when this golf course was built versus the Country Club of Charleston and Yeamans Hall, I've always said that prior to the renovation, if you squinted a little bit, you could start to see that it was like a bad game of telephone. A lot of the golf being built at Charleston Muni was by a lot of the same laborers that were building the Country Club of Charleston less than a mile down the road and Yeamans Hall just across town. And so you go back and look and see there was obviously some elements and some of these big pads that now exist in their entirety for the big rectangular greens were there. They had just shrunk and atrophied down to satellite dishes in the middle of some of these big pads. And so there were hints, and if you squinted a little bit, you could see it. Now, certainly we took that to the upteenth degree in creating some really wild green complexes that, from an architecture perspective, I felt like it was a great opportunity to do something and really take the contours back to a level that reflect the 1920s and 30s and the golden age of golf course architecture, primarily because it was in a municipal setting where we knew the green speeds were never going to be excessive. And I think that's one of the biggest set of handcuffs that gets put on golf course architects today is this concern that, you know, green speeds are going to get out of hand and you have to be somewhat subdued in your contouring, which changes the dynamics of play into greens, around greens generally, and has led to a lot of the continued growth of some of the most heavily resource consumptive features of the golf course, greens getting a lot bigger in order to engage some of that creativity. These greens are bigger than they were. They're still way smaller than what a modern green would be considered appropriate to be. But the contours reflect some real dynamic stuff that allow you to utilize them and to think about them. And I'd say that that's been the biggest feedback that that we've received. That the highest compliment in my mind is I've had a lot of people come to me and say, you really have to think your way around this golf course today. And thinking your way around the golf course to me is the highest form of flattery, to be able to have to do that. Using those bold contours and not flying balls directly at pins and thinking a little bit, all speaks to that style of architecture and the desire to bring it back and make it accessible.
I know better than to ask an architect what his favorite green is. It's like picking your favorite child, but what's your favorite hole to watch golfers play?
I have the great pleasure of every day taking my kids to and from school through the Riverland Drive and Maybank Highway intersection, which is at the tee of the 11th hole, which is our Redan. And so I often find myself at that stoplight being able to sit and watch guys and girls play that hole and watching them use the kick slope on the Redan and watching the ball. And ironically, Matt, we've had more hole-in-ones on the 11th hole there than is certainly statistically normal. And it's not like it's a funnel. Yeah. But I think the thing that really makes it interesting is because of the severity of the kick slope, the ball is constantly moving on the ground. And a ball on the ground is bound to find a hole versus the ball bouncing through the air. And so there's just a higher percentage of time that it's on the surface moving around that allows for that high percentage of aces. But it's really fun to watch. And so for me, yeah, that's definitely it. And it's been humbling to see the feedback and one of the best Redans in the country you can play by Golf Digest. And it sits in a position that is very visible to all those driving from downtown Charleston to Kiawah Island and through town. And the green is bold and really stands out as you drive by and has great shadowing late in the afternoon with the sun setting over the Stono as well. So
there's no form of golf I can't enjoy, but when it's a bounce and roll game, that is just my cup of tea. And I think the game's much more fun when that ball's on the ground and moving in different directions. Let's talk about, I'm going to channel my inner professor here, and he would ask you about drainage because he had played Muni a few times before the renovation, which, do I have it right, completed in 2021?
2020.
2020, finished, okay.
Opened back up December 9th of 2020. We started construction January 19th of 2020. So we did all of this soup to nuts in roughly right at 11 months.
Wow. And he had mentioned I remember back then, interested to see what they do about drainage and what they do about, I think it's what the back nine could get a little soupy with tides and any rainfall. So how big of a challenge was that in your plan and in the execution of, and how big of a challenge was that around, I'm curious about cost with drainage, right? I just played Pasta Tiempo that got an incredible new drainage project out there. But I think their budget was pretty large for that place versus what you might have had for municipal golf course. So talk me through drainage a little bit and how you guys were able to address that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, to quote Donald Ross, the three most important parts of golf course architecture, right? Drainage, drainage, and drainage. And
is that a Ross quote?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was about to cite my co-host on that one. I thought he said that, but no.
Ross didn't write a lot, but there is a collection of small writings from Donald that include that one. So for us, it was the single most important thing as well, given the pressure that we feel in Charleston from rising tide levels, more extremity of storms, and the back nine you mentioned. Prior to renovations, the thunderstorms in the afternoons and the high tides, even a normal high tide, forget the king tides that we see in the spring and the fall here, were enough to create closures in the golf course in the back nine. In fact, in July of the previous year before we closed, I think the golf course was closed almost two-thirds of the days because of drainage issues and non-passable conditions. And so for us, that was the single most important thing. And we did have to look beyond the golf course and figure out the systems that surrounded it and how we could make sure that we weren't in Charleston. And this is something that we've dealt with in a lot of low-lying cities, New Orleans included. You have to learn to live with the water. And it's one of the big principles of the Dutch dialogues, which the folks of the Netherlands have been living with water for a long time. And it's about moving the water. You're never going to get rid of it, and you can't fight it. You got to move it into the places that are more preferable for golf and maintain that fast, firm condition in the areas of play. And so for us, the biggest thing was to create areas of drainage on the back nine to try to contain the water and move it away from the lines of play and get it to a position to where it could be moved out once the tides receded into the Stono River adjacent. And because of this and some of these drainage improvements that we've made in creating some new ponds on the golf course that are largely in out-of-play areas, though one really created the Cape Hole environment for us on the 12th hole, which was great. It was beneficial to the surrounding communities as well, because a lot of what we were seeing was the neighborhoods surrounding Charleston Muni were having the same kind of flooding issues that the golf course were. And it was because the capacity in the ditches just couldn't take it. And by adding some of these drainage elements and ponds around the golf course, we were able to move water out of the ditches down into these basins on the golf course and improve drainage, not only on the golf course, but in the surrounding community. So that was a big key to selling the product and selling this project to go forward, was some of that community benefit beyond just the dollars and cents of a better golf course that's going to drive the interest of out-of-town play and subsidize the golf course and generate a positive cash flow for the first time in many years, but also these positive impacts on the local community from a drainage perspective. We're one of the leading, depending on the audience, usually the first thing that we talked about when presenting this project.
One of my, I think there's always this discussion in golf about the scratch player versus the high handicap, and we hear so many golf course architects talk about bridging that gap and bringing people closer together. But I think as it pertains to municipal golf courses that I've experienced, and I grew up on a great one here in Akron, Ohio, and J.E. Good Park. It's a Burt Way, built the same time as Firestone Country Club. But a lot of folks kind of think golf for the masses can't be architecturally stimulating or too daring or too bold, maybe is the word I'm looking for. And I've not played Muni, and I will in October, but every picture, especially at those shadowy hours, looks daring and it looks bold. And it's everything in the contrast to what a traditional Muni is. So what's your feeling on that? What would you say to those people that kind of think that, you know, it can't be too hard or it can't be too much?
Yeah, I'll cite first two grad school colleagues of mine who are both in the business today, Will Smith and Mike McCartan, who are the co-directors and founders of National Links Trust. And I can remember 25 years ago now at the University of Georgia sitting around and Will saying, cheap golf doesn't have to mean bad golf. And that, I think, is something that is really important to remember. And teaching people about golf and the basic forms, and if we really want to hook people and provide interest, we need to have interest in the architecture. And it does need to show off all of the creative ways you can play golf and not just golf for the golf robot scratch player who's flying at 300 and, you know, backing it up on the greens and pin seeking all the time and kind of this target golf mentality that we've grown to expect on tour and elsewhere. That to me is a really important element of growing the game. And I don't love that saying, but I think in creating interest in the game and making people understand that just because they can't hit the ball like Tiger Woods or like Rory McIlroy, that they can't enjoy the game and play it in a way that is right for them. And that thinking component of the game, I think, is really important. And being able to, and I'll even cite my own, you know, son at 5 years old starting in the game. I remember him being behind, actually this was at Yeamans Hall, behind the front left bunker on the Redan there. And he's hit his tee shot down right in front of it. And he's standing there and the pin's just over the bunker on the left side. And he looks at it and he looks at it for a second. And then he steps back and he looks and he takes out his putter and he puts it to the front right corner. And then he uses the slope to putt it down to the pin and he makes his putt. And I was like, and I didn't say a word through this whole process. And I go, what made you do that? He goes, I'd have never gotten out of that bunker. And I was like, well, you're right. But that's a really good strategic thought. And it was a lot more fun for him to use the contours, to play around, to figure out his way around. And I think all too often these days, golf is looked at as a point-to-point game, and it's not. It's meant to be played on the ground. It's meant to be creative. And by creating these contours, I still believe that contours and short grass around greens are the ultimate equalizers. And for the average player, it's still readily playable. And for the good player, it makes them think. And good players don't like to think. They want to hit the same shot every time and have an automatic two putt and move on. So for the folks that, and there's certainly been some, I've fielded my fair share, and Marshall probably more than me, comments about the difficulty of the golf course. And certainly when it first reopened, the firmness of it was at the edge. But as it settled in, I really do believe the golf course is more playable today than it was before. The ball, it plays shorter. There's more opportunities to use contours to move the ball onto the greens. And to be honest, some of the average players, and maybe some that are up in age a little bit more, figured out how to play the golf course a lot quicker than some of our top flight players that play Muni on a regular basis, because they were trying to fly it at greens, flying it at pins, and playing point to point, which you can't do in a lot of cases on that golf course today. And so the guys that really move the ball on the ground and figured out where to hit it, and also realized too that, you know, the fast and firm conditions that were brought back by the improved drainage and some more modern turf and speed around the greens and in the fairways allowed them to actually play a golf course that was effectively shorter than what it had been before. So I think it's easy to, you know, judge a book by its cover and look and say, ooh, that looks really, really hard. But it only looks hard if you're looking at it on a straight line. And I think it really challenges you mentally more than it does physically today.
I love that story about your son as just a, you know, compelling architecture. Me is such a exploration of the ego, you know, whether you're 5 or 95, you got to ask yourself, you know, is this in the bag and do I have this shot? And, you know, on a different day, who knows? He probably dumps that in the bunker and spends all day there. But that's
absolutely,
isn't that the great, that's what's great about it, is it forces us to explore ourselves a little bit. And that is one of my fundamental psychological beliefs of golf, is it's what really gets us coming back and tied to it is we're checking in with ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. And you have to do it a lot more when you're on a stimulating golf course like mm-hmm. the one we're talking about.
That's right.
Marshall, it's a good time to bring you in. You know, to have this massive renovation take place and to come out on the other side and still have, what is it, 18, you said, $25 for a local tee time. To have that along with the visitor rate or the outside guest rate, which I can't remember what we'll be paying in October, but talk to us a little bit about managing to that post-renovation and what you've kind of learned about management of a course that had this full renovation to it.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's always easier to pitch when you can keep everything affordable. And we knew the product. You know, we're putting a lot of trust in Troy, who lives next door. And so he's got as much or more to lose as anybody else here in this conversation. So, but we put a lot of trust in it. I was pure ignorance, which was probably the best way to go about it. And the rest of us just kind of fell into place, just did what we had to do, and which made it fun. Didn't really know what was coming the next day. And when we got into the rates conversation, we started saying, okay, well, let's see if we can keep the city residents where we were prior to the renovation. And if we can pull that off, there should be no pressure from city council. And fortunately, we were able to do that. And the budgeted numbers that we proposed, it was almost identical to the results. Not necessarily the same route to get there, meaning a lot more play than we anticipated, a lot more resident play, which is a good thing. Difficult to make room for new people to come see the golf course, but we got there, right? And that pleases everybody. So it's been a fun run. I don't think we have any regrets with the way we set it up.
But I think a lot of, this is interesting because we just had a show last week with the gentleman building a private club in South Carolina, a little south of you guys at Broom Sedge. And, you know, they talked about this ambition to set out with a different model, more similar to the UK, where they're going to have a robust membership with membership fees and dues. But they're going to allow for some opportunity for outside play with an outside rate. And most people think about that as a UK model or private exclusive model to some accessible golf. But, you know, municipal golf courses, and I don't know, Torrey Pines always come to mind because when I'm out in Southern California visiting my buddy in the Navy, he always gets us on and I'm paying a much different rate than he pays as a San Diego resident. So this is a model that existed elsewhere. Did you guys have, prior to the renovation, did you have a different rate for outside citizens? So for folks that aren't local, did you have that before?
We did. It wasn't as, we're at $80 riding for out of town now. I think prior we were at 48. So it was kind of we're at 40 now for a resident. We were at 40, I guess, for residents prior. And then we have a tri-county tier as well. So we're kind of on James Island, where the golf course is located, there's kind of a mix of city residents and Charleston County residents, some of them in a town of James Island, some of them in an unincorporated county area. And so we wanted to give a break to county residents as well. So we kind of did a three-tier system. It's a logistical nightmare, but it's only fair to keep, to give a break to your neighbors, you know. There's homes on the golf course that aren't in the city of Charleston. So it makes it confusing. There's a lot of renters as well in Charleston. So not many people really know where they stand when they come in the door. But it's a fair system. The out-of-town rate, just in comparison, there's a handful of courses between just south of us and into Mount Pleasant that charge $100 to $120 range, which are your kind of public go-to golf courses. They're great courses, but that's our competition, and we're $30-$40 under it, and we're self-sufficient. So then there's something to be said for that.
Oh my, yeah, absolutely. And from a standpoint of a golf geek coming down and playing, I want to pay a higher rate to just be able to see it.
And it's a good situation to kind of, you know, exceed expectations, I think, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's well said about value in the game, right? We talk so much about cost and the inputs and the price, but really getting an experience of value is somewhat a rarity and feels pretty good when you're leaving a certain place, especially if it wasn't the best day of swings. You know, you added them up and they're a little bit more than you'd like, but the values.
I got to pull a putter out more.
Yeah.
You know, it would be just a matter of time before that. You know, I was listening to that Vokey promo, which I agree, great wedges. But I know at some point Troy's going to chime in and say that's not necessarily the magic to the game. His son is not specific to his son. We see it every day. What's my best way around this nightmare?
Let's talk about that. As Troy mentioned that you get more of the feedback, right? Because you're boots on the ground on a day-to-day basis. How do you deal with that? I mean, I know when you got greens that are this bold, hell, I run a golf society and I hear it about the places that we go visit. What's your approach, Marshall? How do you talk someone off the ledge that says, oh, these greens?
I did get a text last thing. It was last Friday, actually, when I was running out the door, and it said, hey, a guy was looking for you to complain, tell you that this golf course had ruined a wet dream. Immediately had to send that one to Troy, as I usually do. You know, in most cases, we kind of know what's coming. And we tell people when they walk out there on the first tee that the best ones are ones who've played prior to the renovation, I think, and then the ones after the renovation. And we just say, have an open mind. And you have an open mind and you go out there because that first hole hits you. You know, it's a gut punch, which I think Troy was working hard for. And and then you go to two and you've got this tiny green, this postage stamp that, you know, drops off with a cliff on every side of it. And then he put this ditch in the middle of the third fairway that, you know, it's just potluck whether you're going to navigate it or not. And, you know, at the end of the day, what he's done is made the four most difficult starting holes in golf. And so it's, but people get pleasantly surprised as they keep going, you know, and the end of the golf course is awesome. It's a lot of fun. So usually people end on a high note, I think. And we get the feedback. The course conditions have been good. It was set up for, you know, it's a different course every day with the wind, with the pins, with the tees. It's and that's what makes it fun. That's what makes a good golf course. Again, and a lot of this I had no idea of, you know, just pure ignorance up front, but the amount that I've learned through watching Troy put this place together has been pretty awesome. And I think people recognize that, especially the ones that have played before and after the renovation.
Yeah. Troy, would you agree with that? I know you started your career working on Pete Dye golf courses, and Pete wasn't scared of any critiques or criticisms. Does that hit you in any certain type of way?
I like it. I really do. I mean, I think, and you're right to cite Pete in this because I did learn a lot from Pete, and he was a great mentor for me. And my first experiences were at the Ocean Course, which, you know, I think, again, a golf course that is just visually intimidating to no end and has evolved into an incredibly playable place. As long as you're willing to take your medicine.
6 hours.
We as golfers. Well, it depends on how much medicine you're taking, right? Like, and Marshall, you know, cites the first hole. I mean, I think that was a big emphasis for me, you know, from an architectural perspective. It is the double plateau, which is, often the case, the opening hole in a lot of Rainer designs. You look at Mountain Lake, Gaiman's Hall. And so being able to fit that template into the first hole there, and it is bold, and it is a, you know, I really did. You know, I say, if you quit, we want you to quit early. And I want you to understand that it's a new day, that this is a different place, and that this, and set the expectation early that, expect to be, expect the unexpected. And I would agree that the front nine, and this was probably the case and less amplified pre-renovation, but the front nine's always been a shot to a shot and a half harder than the back. Now it's more like twice that. I'd say it's 2 to 3 shots harder on the front. A good round of golf out there often is 39, 33. So I think it is, and there's a good rhythm to that. The rhythm of the golf course of really kind of, you know, strap in, get ready, survive. And then as you get into 6, which is the punch bowl, which is a great opportunity, 7 being a reachable 5, you know, you get that kind of deep breath. And then all of a sudden it's, you better strap in again, because 8, the Baritz, is a 230-yard par 3. 9 is the longest par 4 on the golf course, the Alps hole. And then you get to 10 is a very reachable, the same distance as 9 as a par 5. And so from 10 on through, not only does the golf course become much more gettable from a scoring perspective, so long as you show the right amount of restraint, it's also where it really opens up with the change to what happened on the golf course. Because once you cross from 10 to 11, and now you're standing on 11T looking out at the Stono River, which prior to the renovation, you didn't even know was there. There was some second successional forest growth that kind of blocked your view of the river. It was the smallest green on the golf course, just kind of a nothing downhill par 3. And now it becomes your entry into what is this second act of the golf course that feels very linksy. It's wide open. It's on the river. And you also get into this corner of the golf course where you go from Redan to Cape to Road to Short, which are arguably the 4 most identifiable template holes in the world, all in succession in this one corner of the golf course that almost acts like a little amphitheater. So for the City Am, which we play annually at the Muni, you know, it's exciting to kind of be able to see those last groups watch from 11 to 14 and, you know, kind of looking and seeing how's everybody's, you know, body language, how's everybody playing. And so,
why is that taking so long?
Yeah, that's right. And so that corner of the golf course is where the most change, as Marshall mentioned, the people who've played the golf course before and come back, when they get to 11T, they're like, this, I don't remember playing this golf course. And it's because they didn't. It wasn't there. But you asked me about my favorite green, Matt. 13 is probably my favorite golf hole that we built out there. And it was because it's I call it a Franken hole. It is the road hole. It's the road hole green complex with the road hole bunker. It's also got a principal's nose and kind of acts as a bottle hole for off of the tee, but and is the widest golf course or widest fairway on the golf course at almost 100 yards wide with these centerline bunkers. And by far the biggest change to any golf hole out there. This was a golf hole that sat 7 feet lower than it sits today. That was wet even at a mid tide generally and had nowhere to drain and sat below kind of sea level to some degree. That now, you know, acts as this great opportunity to play different directions depending on pin positions. Really gives you options off of the tee to really be bold and take on the marsh down the right hand side to provide the best angle into the green, or go to the left and have a semi blind shot over the road hole bunker into kind of the narrow section of the green with the marsh behind. It's, you know, it's strategically my favorite out there. I think visually it's stunning, and the drainage story that it tells, it really does. That golf hole really does personify this project in every way possible. So
That's oh man, you guys got me geared up to see it and you know, let it fly. I'm going to ask you, Troy, on the cost side, Marshall, the rounds of golf and just the practicality of having a renovation to a course and conditions. You mentioned conditions have been pretty good lately, but I got to imagine you guys are pumping out a considerable amount of rounds. Can you tell me a little bit about that in terms of just what the renovation has done for maintenance and quality of the play that now people have with what I'm assuming is increased rounds, especially over the last few years?
It's been an increase in rounds for sure, and we've had peaks that have gotten close. I think we did just over 70,000 rounds last year on a small footprint, 6,400 yards at a muni with a small parking lot with the highway between it. That's a lot of people. We're not very good at traffic control, apparently, but it's you know, it's a slightly more structured chaos. So, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on the tee sheet now where we didn't necessarily have the leverage before. It produces some wear and tear for sure. I think the one benefit we do have though from having so many rounds of golf, if we have a lot of walkers, it's a very walker friendly course, green to tees close together. And almost, you know, half our rounds are walking rounds. So that decreases the wear and tear a little bit. You know, as Troy mentioned, obviously out of the renovation, pretty firm conditions at start. So, you know, in terms of ball marks and conditions around the greens didn't affect it quite as much. This time of year, you know, we're kind of hanging on to the grass starts growing more rapidly. And, you know, we, as much as we talk about trying to lower the body count out there, this time of year, it's, again, we're not great at traffic control, but it serves a good purpose and we want as many people to enjoy it as we can. So our superintendent's used to working with the same type of grasses. He's used to working with a lot of traffic for that matter. And we've got a lot of vested crew that's all in.
I mean, if it was all perfect, you guys would have to drop the title of Muni. You know, that wouldn't make any sense. Yeah,
well, best I kind of heard it when we started hosting the South Carolina Pub Links, which they started back a couple years ago. And, you know, first year, we're kind of bouncing around asking, you know, what'd you think? We played the ball down. We typically had not played the ball down in our city tournaments. This is in September, grass growing, everything was in good shape. There's a ton of divots. There's some thin areas around the greens. I asked, you know, one of the players just won a couple of city AMs and was at the top of the leaderboard. I said, well, what'd you think? He said, yeah, there was thin areas, divots. We're playing to Muni. We know what we're getting into. You know, it's the way it's supposed to be. And so that's it's a good outlook, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Hear. I mean, that's playing my heartstrings. I don't think golf should be fair one bit. I think it's better when it's not. Troy, Marshall mentioned that you live right there. What's it been like for you? Because I mean, you've worked on plenty of different projects, but not many that you see every day. Give me the good and the bad of living right next to something that you were so heavily involved in and still are.
Well, I certainly loved my commute for this project. It was the experience of building the golf course, especially during the height of COVID, was one that I will never forget. And having the opportunity, I mentioned my 5-year-old son, he was about 6 or 7 at the time when we were building the golf course. And, you know, him having the opportunity to go out and, you know, paint gun and pin flags in hand and be involved and see how this goes was a great opportunity and something that'll always be special. I only see the warts. You know, I still see things I'd love to have done better myself. And I love to see the evolution of how things have gone. Steve Agassi has done an incredible job as a superintendent there, and I've known Steve for a long time, and he deserves all of the credit for what this place continues to get better year in and year out. Trying to get him the resources that he needs to, because he sees it too. The things he wants to improve are the same that Marshall does and that I do. And I think having that that shared interest in seeing the place get continually better has been great for me. But I, like I said, every day do have that joy of sitting at that stoplight and being able to watch play at 11 and 17, which is another, you know, is a drivable par four up the hill there as you finish the round. And it's fun to be able to see it in action. And the number of reps, a lot of times, I mean, listen, there's no other golf course I've done this doing 70,000 rounds a year, right? So the amount of feedback that you get to see and experience is elevated because of that. You've got that many more reps on it. Also, the golf course melts and matures and changes over time in a quicker fashion. I mean, the bunkers are traditional Rainer flat bottom bunkers with steep grass faces. And during construction, I can remember walking with folks and saying, I can't see the sand in that bunker. I said, don't worry, you will. And it was something that, you know, evolved over the course of months rather than the course of years, as it often does with renovations where you might only have 25 or 30,000 rounds a year. And so the traffic, the fact that the golf course has held up as well as it has is a testament to Steve and Marshall and his crew. And I think it's in really keeping a focus on those fast and firm conditions, because we don't overseed the golf course. I'm a big opponent of overseeding in general, because it does lose that fast and firm conditioning, and it creates damage by the necessary, you know, keeping things wet at the top. And one of my big goals with the green complexes, they are California greens. They're not USGA greens. They're not meant to retain moisture. They're meant to get rid of moisture and suck through as fast as possible and really adapt to deep watering so that you don't have a wet top condition as often as possible, which is going to help with that damage. It reduces the damage on the greens. And that's something that I think has held true. There's still some trees, that some shade issues that we work through, which I think is the approach that we're taking, I actually like. I think that it's more with a scalpel than a chainsaw, almost no pun intended there. But I think we do, you know, we're being really selective about taking the right trees and making sure that we're fixing the issues from an agronomic perspective while maintaining the aesthetics and the strategy that can be provided by, you know, I know there's a lot of renovations out there where it's, you know, we're going to take 2,000 trees day one. And I think that's a valid way of doing it. I think this is too.
Yeah. Yeah. The details, Matt. I mean, I think maybe my last question for both you guys, and it was, I guarantee you, everybody listening to this is thinking, man, my local muni that I either grew up on or that's just down the street, or that, man, why is this not happening in my local meeting? Why can't we get something cooking, you know, at our place? And from your guys that have now lived it, have been through it, and the teamwork, and that's what Marshall, I think I told you this on a call not that long ago, but I did get that sense of this was such a big initiative, but you guys had so many people behind it. And we didn't even really touch on the Friends of Muni much, but just maybe share with those of us that are listening, involved in our local communities, would love to up the golf asset for our communities in a municipal golf course. Like, what does this take? Like, what would you say is some of the main factors that you would say were needed to get to where you're at today?
I mean, primarily support. You know, we know there's a huge following. We were relying on some funding, which was in a short period of time, and we've still got funding, and that's where Friends of the Muni comes in play. And it's everything from, it may be course related, it may be programming, it may be equipment related, whatever it is. And we do want to make sure that we understand and the city understands the cost of operating the facility. So we try to keep the cost, you know, congregated into the operating budget, but we also know that we have continued incoming support from the community. These people, you know, regardless of what's here, I think the hardest, the biggest challenge to get this thing pushed through from the start was, you know, you ask about the amount of rounds. Yeah, we've had more, but we've constantly had 60 to 70,000 rounds. If it's not broke, don't fix it, right? But we knew the potential, the property we're on, the location, the proximity to downtown, the amount of visitors we have in the area. All of these have had a major uptick, and we're able to keep the rates where they were. So it's and the amount of kids we put through. We don't charge kids for golf. The amount of kids we're able to put through there. We have, I think, 10 or 11 schools between middle, elementary, middle high schools that are coming in the afternoons. We have the first tee programs out there. We have our own U.S. kids programs. It's never ending, but it, and yeah, it's borderline too many people at certain times, but the more you get to allow, them to experience it, the more support you create. And I think that's all, you know, sort of speaks for itself when you look at the whole equation here.
Troy. For those that are thinking, why can't this happen to mine? I'm going to make a prediction that it will. I think that this momentum that we're seeing in municipal golf around the country is just getting started. And I would encourage you to advocate. The support piece that Marshall mentions has to come from various levels, politically, financially, grassroots-wise. My hope for the future, and I certainly appreciate what's happening in my home state of South Carolina and the growth of great golf, primarily on the private national club model. Matt and I talked before we opened here about how somewhere between Aiken and Camden, South Carolina, the epicenter of golf has exploded. And so those products are great and it's wonderful, but I do believe that the next step forward for us in golf in the United States is this accessible path of great municipal golf that is architecturally significant and that drives people to the game through interest and intrigue. I think it's very possible. So I hope that comes to fruition for a lot of those that are thinking that. And I certainly have heard from my fair share of people around the country who feel like they have the bones of a great project, which is the way this one started. And I believe there's a lot of opportunities for it. So
there's got to be an emphasis too on the story, right? It was a local effort. We got a local architect donating his time. We've got the amount of people that were able to pitch in, the whole, even the concept, the architecture concept, you know, the golden age, the time the course was built in 1929. We had Gaiman's in the country club, not by comparison at all, but that's all that was here. And so really pitching the whole, you know, telling the story. What is the golden age of architecture? Why are we not digging it all out and redoing it from scratch? It still has the same footprint. It's got, you know, it's 6,400 yards. I got back on when y'all were at the end of the whole, you know, fund for the 100 shooter and make you think for the scratch golfer. And I think it's true. It's a hard thing to believe in until you see it. And the punch bowl, I think, is a great example, right? When we're building the punch bowl, looking at this thing, it's severe. And everybody's saying, well, how am I going to get the ball that high? So if you're trying to get the ball that high, you're going to have a long day, right? You got to, you know, figure out how to work the contours. And the good players, I've noticed is you have a lot of your, you know, middle-aged, like golf travel groups, something like what y'all are doing. I think they appreciate it. You know, it's something different. And we hosted the high school state championship. Alternatively, the high school state championship, these guys want to go career it every day, right? But they were pissed. But it, you know, because there's one of the other classes at Bulls Bay and shooting, you know, the winning team at, I don't know, 12, 15 under par. And I think ours was like 30 over par. So it's a drastic difference, but it's all competition. It's fun to see the different reactions. And but even statewide, nationally, internationally, the support is really what it boils down to.
Yeah, that is a excellent spot to kind of end is, because I know when I've had the conversations with what you said, Marshall, around 60,000-70,000 rounds, you were doing that before. And a lot of the general managers I've talked to at other public or municipal golf courses, they'll just say, yeah, renovation, sure, but we can't do more rounds. You know, after the last 3 years, after COVID, we're doing more rounds. Why would we do it? And then I go back to what Troy's point was earlier when he was all the way back in college, sitting with Michael and Will at Georgia. Cheap golf doesn't have to be bad golf. Inexpensive golf doesn't have to be bad golf. And you've seen that play out now with so many other projects that I hope your prediction comes true, Troy. And I will be the first in line with 550 new club members to help that process happen, to have more outcomes like what you guys are creating. Because when people, again, I haven't played and I'm really looking forward to it, but I guarantee that when people are walking off that golf course right now, there's some different feelings than what they did in 2019, and some different thoughts and engagement. And so 70,000 isn't 70,000. It could be 70,000 different experiences that that matter and are enrich people's lives, both golf lives and personal. So I just commend you guys for fighting the good fight, doing it, making it happen. And letting us come down, Marshall. I know getting advanced tee times is not an easy ordeal, man, but getting us locked in so I can make some travel plans, that helps too.
Looking forward to it.
So gentlemen, thank you for the time. Really enjoyed having you with us today. I will have you back on here. Troy, I'd love to hear more about what's going on in your world. And Marshall, we can do recap post our visit. But thank you, gentlemen, for the time awesome. Today.
Thank you,
Matt. Thank y'all for having us.
Hey there, golf fans. Just one quick note before you head out. Just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. You know, this show would not be possible without our audience and the people that love this game. So if you are enjoying some of the conversations, like the one we just had with Troy and our man Marshall from Charleston Muni, give us a like. Give us a follow, subscribe, wherever you're listening to this podcast, whatever you do, give us a thumbs up or follow. All of it helps us get the word out. It helps us grow the show and grow New Club Golf Society. And speaking of New Club Golf Society, if you're not a member, come and join us. If you want to not just listen to places like this and want to go experience them and play alongside some of the coolest people I've met in the game of golf, maybe New Club's for you. So give it a look. Check us out at newclub.golf. Apply, get in the mix, enjoy this beautiful game, and check us out. Also, thanks to our partners at Titleist for the support of both New Club and the Bag Drop podcast. The SM10 wedges are out. Get your fitting at titleist.com. and enjoy a sensational short game for 2024. Thanks all, and we'll catch you on the next one.